This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisan and Noelle Lim. It's 7:06 a.m, Wednesday the 24th of February, and in about 15 minutes we're going to be discussing the government's 5G rollout with Alexander Wong, managing editor of Soya Chinchow. But before that, let's take a look at the markets.
In the US, the Dow and S&P closed up 0.1%. The Nasdaq, however, fell 0.5%. In Asia, Japan was closed for the Emperor's birthday. Shanghai Composite, however, is down 0.2%. Hang Seng closed up 1%.
All right, and the STI as well was up 0.3%, and the KLCI was down 0.3%. So for some insight into global markets, we have on the line with us this morning Jeffrey Halley, Senior Market Analyst at Awanda. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us today. So could you tell us, what were your immediate reactions, first of all, about Jerome Powell's statement from just a few hours ago?
Net, I would say he was as dovish could be, so... he really had to be because the markets were on the edge of having a bit of a mini taper tantrum, regarding inflation fears, as we could see. I mean, the Nasdaq was down 3.8% at one stage intraday, and I think the S&P was down 2%. So he said all the right words. Rates lower for longer, that he wasn't concerned about inflation, but that if it did blow out, then they had tools in the box to take care of it, and that growth and unemployment were far, far away from their targets. So all in all, yes, he's been extremely dovish, and that's restored a bit of calm to the markets and Wall Street overnight.
Jeff, with that in mind, do you think this volatility we're seeing right now is going to be the name of the game for a little bit, or should this put a lot of that to rest, or are there other factors in play?
I think there's a combination of things. A, the world is very, very, very long equity markets. It's been a one-way trade since March last year. So we've got some very heavy positioning in the market. I think what will really... drive this is if we keep seeing yield curves steepening around the world, and it's not just the US longer term rates that have been moving higher either. Even in Japan, rates have been moving higher at the long end of the curve. Australia, New Zealand, Europe, Britain, and a number of other countries. So if a longer term yields keep moving higher, we could see some of the momentum come out of equities in the short term. However, I think across the whole year, we're going to see monetary policy from the world central banks continue to support stock markets.
Yeah, so with steepening yield curves, is this going to be good for banking stocks, I guess, throughout the world?
That is a very good point. And yes, is the answer to that one. Banks, as much as we love or hate them, tend to make more money with a steeper yield curve. And the basic reason for that is it means that they can take deposits at a lower end, at the short end of the curve, at a lower rate. And if the yield curve is steeper, they can lend money for mortgages, et cetera, at higher rates. So their interest margin tends to expand. So a positive yield curve is actually indicative of healthy growth in an economy. And banks do well in that environment. And that's why I'm quite bullish on banks across Asia this year.
Okay. So on gold prices, I think... what's the impact on gold prices based on what Jerome Powell said tonight?
Yeah, I mean, gold's had a bit of a dead cat bounce, and it's really not out of the danger zone yet. Technically, gold should be a hedge against inflation, so there should be some support, but it's really performing quite badly at the moment. And I think a lot of that is down to the performance of the dollar in January. Look, the jury's still out here. I mean, I would prefer to see gold recapture the $1,850 level before breathing easier again. I think there's still there's still quite a high chance that we could test 1,750. And if that was to break, then gold could drop quite quickly into the 1,600. So at the moment, gold's sort of fairly neutral, but it's still in danger, I think, at these levels.
Now, Jeff, let's also take a look at the yuan. So global demand for the yuan is surging. Can it be a credible reserve currency this year, or will regulatory concerns prevent it from doing so?
There's a few complications here. Now, I know it's the sort of the theme du jour, so to speak, the China rise and the global and a reserve currency. But China's doesn't have an open capital account. You can't just move yuan in and out of China freely. You have to get permission from the PBOC and any number of other regulators, which is why we have these Shanghai, Shenzhen pipes for retail investors in China to trade in Hong Kong, for example. It's also a managed currency, so it runs a dirty peg against a small basket of currencies, the US dollar and the euro and a couple of others. So when a currency effectively is pegged, either sort of implicitly or directly, there's not really a lot of point in buying it. You might as well buy the components of the peg, in this case, US dollars, euros, et cetera, that make up the basket. So although there's a lot of talk about it right now, until the yuan becomes free-floating, I don't think it can become a fully credible reserve currency because it's pegged against a bunch of other currencies.
Speaking of prices overall, Jeff, from corn to crude to copper, commodities in general have enjoyed a bit of a stellar start to 2021. What do you think is behind, in your view, what's behind the rises in the various commodity prices? Are we talking about demand or supply issues here?
It's more, demand issues from not so much the retail, but from manufacturing. When you look at the data around the world, you're seeing that the manufacturing export-facing sectors of most economies in the world are doing very, very well. The problem is the domestic demand in Asia, in America, in Europe. Domestic demand still remains muted. People are still working from home. Their jobs aren't secure. They're saving money. So what we're seeing is a lot of logistical constraints. But also, I think we're seeing the move in commodities reflecting what will be an accelerating global recovery later in 2021. And we're going to see demand for these products increase as the world's economies start to properly reopen and we start to see perhaps cracks in the borders and people starting to move around in the world. So I think it's reflective of the expected global recovery acceleration later in the year. And I expect that commodities are going to remain firm all of 2021.
Jeff, is there any particular commodity you are particularly paying attention to?
Well, at the moment, I'm watching these base metals. I'm looking at copper and I'm looking at tin, particularly aluminium, but also oil. I think oil is very, very quickly rebalancing now. And we've got to the point where the only sector that is still at pre-pandemic levels, is aviation fuel for very obvious reasons. If OPEC's meeting next week doesn't choose to increase the production or reduce the production cuts, I think we can see another leg up in oil again. The cold weather, of course, across much of the Northern Hemisphere isn't helping there either. That's supportive for energy prices. So I'm watching oil very, very closely along with industrial-based metals.
What about Bitcoin? Is that something you are watching closely?
I'm watching because everybody keeps asking me about it every day. So you can tell my age, I'm a little bit of a cynic about it. So I think, you know, yesterday, I mean, we've seen some of these cryptos drop by, I think it was something like 20%, and then Bitcoin's fallen by over 10%. You know, there's an old saying in the markets, and it's that liquidity is an illusion. It's always there when you don't need it, and it's never there when you do need it. And I think that's the lesson that we're seeing from Bitcoin at the moment, is that the liquidity is not there when everybody's running for the door, for the exit door. And I think this is part of it's growing pains. I think it's very important to distinguish between a tradable asset and an investable asset. And I don't think volatility in cryptos makes them investable assets at the moment. But I fully acknowledge that you can trade them and possibly make some money or possibly lose some money. Although by the looks of it overnight, most people seem to have lost some money.
Thanks so much for speaking with us this morning, Jeff. That was Jeffrey Halley, Senior Market Analyst at Owanda, giving us some insight into global markets as well as some of the commodities and Bitcoin. But speaking of investables, according to Bloomberg, SoftBank Group plans to expand its investments in biotech and healthcare. So this would open up a new front in its growing asset management strategy. Sources said that the Japanese firm is planning to spend billions investing in public biotech companies via its asset management arm, SB North Star.
If that name sounds familiar, they were related to the tech options trading we saw earlier last year, which caught a lot of attention. Now, earlier this month, CEO Masayoshi Son said that SB North Star was still in testing phase or test operations. But analysts and investors have been speculating about how the founder will spend more than $80 billion in assets after he unveiled plans to sell off $43 billion US dollars in assets and buy back about $23 billion in his own stock. SoftBank has already made a slew of investments in the biotech healthcare sectors, including a $300 million stake in US-based DNA sequencing company Pacific Biosciences, Biosciences of California, and also a number of investments through its Vision Fund.
Well, with the COVID-19 pandemic, we know that health is the new goal, isn't it?
Is that the new North Star for SoftBank? We'll find out.
We will indeed. But right now, we are about to head into some messages. And then up next, we're discussing the government's 5G rollout with Alexander Wong, managing editor of Soya Chinchow. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.